Blog Talk Radio.
I ain't got nothing but three things to say about that.
Welcome to Loving the Skin You're In Radio. I'm your host, Andrea Amador, best known as the Juicy Woman. Today is November 13, 2013. As a certified empowerment coach, author, speaker, and body image self-esteem expert, and curvy and confident woman, I'm here to share with you my expertise and teach you how to bust out of body shame so that you can love the skin you're in. Want to know more about how to change your thoughts and see what's coming next on this show? Just visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/thejuicywoman and click on like to join the group. You can also get body love and tips and more by following me on Twitter at thejuicywoman. And don't forget, if you missed any of the episodes of this show, you can catch all the archived audios at blogtalkradio.com/the-juicy-woman. Also, for those of you who have asked about coaching with me, you can check out my group coaching support membership program called the Curvy and Confident Coaching Club. For more information on that and other things that are coming up, visit my Facebook page at thejuicywoman.com. Now, I want you to remember this is a live call-in show, so I want to encourage you to have a conversation with me and my guest and really, really dig in and participate in the program. You can either do that by asking your questions using the chat feature or calling in. The call-in number, grab your pencils, it's 760-888-5736. Okay, here it is. Tonight, we're going to be talking about how you feel about your body. Yeah, getting down and dirty under the covers. Sex, how you feel about your body in relation to sex and being sexy and feeling your sensual, sexy self. Let me ask you, when you want to get turned on, do you feel compelled to turn the lights off because you're uncomfortable with your body? Today's guest is the author of the book, Beautiful, 4 Short Stories of Curvy Woman Love, and she has the secret sauce for a body boost of confidence for you. Today we have her on the show to talk about wrestling, sex, love, beauty, and confidence. What a crazy combination. If you're feeling insecure about your body at all, you cannot afford to miss this show. Let me tell you about Lori. L.N. Carrington is a writer whose previous work has covered topics from fiction to news stories, human interest features, and entertainment reviews. She has done it all. And she's actually a descendant of silent film star, oh boy, she's going to get me because I may actually be pronouncing this wrong, Ruby de Rameau, and criminal justice reporter and author James G. Baldwin. Following her passion for wrestling, she wrote the book, The Wrestling Babe. She wrote the Wrestling Babe internet column for 7 years. She's a former music reviewer for Indie Music Stop, and she penned several other works which appear in print and web media. Without further ado, here's Lori. Welcome, Lori. I'm so excited to have you on the show. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Good evening, everybody.
Thank you so much. So you write some steamy stuff, babe.
Oh, so I've been told.
Sorry?
Oh, so I've been told.
Oh, yes. So I would love to hear, how did you get your start as a writer, and how did it all get moving for you?
Well, let's see. I had my actual first piece published in an area newspaper when I was still a senior in high school. And what I did a little music review back then and actually worked on the school paper, and they published it. And the advisor liked it so much, she actually sent it in to one of the area newspapers in town, and they published it. course, I didn't get paid for it, but I have to admit, I like the publicity.
Oh, that's amazing! A senior in high school.
Yeah, I'd say about a month before my 18th birthday, if I remember correctly.
Oh my gosh, what a fabulous gift! That's amazing.
A few years ago.
I would have had that plastered all over the place.
Oh, I did back in then. That was way before the internet. Like I said, a few years ago.
What I love so much is how you dig in and you create these characters that are so complex and so, you know, I hate to use the word real, but they're really real. Like in the book 50, how you talk about, you know, how she struggles with her weight and a little bit of hearing loss and osteoarthritis, and ain't none of that going to stop Randy.
I would love to know. Stop anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the really fun thing that as people who consume the books that are written, we get our ideas of how to feel about ourselves and how to feel about the world around us through the content that we're, you know, reading and listening to and watching TV and all of that. So what's very exciting is that you're pioneering a whole new evolutionary movement in terms of feminine empowerment, because traditionally for years it has been positioned that a beautiful woman is this beautiful, slender, blonde, you know, Barbie-shaped female that succumbs to every man's desire and has no feeling of her own and has no thoughts or voice at all. And you completely shift that and kick it to the curb and create these amazing characters.
Well, yeah, I kind of wanted to do some things that, you know, because the media is so saturated with the size 2, the size 0 girl is the only perfect girl. And that's not always true. I mean, I grew up in a household. My great-grandmother was a big woman. My mother was a big woman. Both of my sisters were big women, my late sister and, of course, my oldest sister who's living, and she's in her 60s right now. And, you know what? I said, this is ridiculous. I mean, everybody type can be beautiful to someone. And I wanted to outline these in my books. In my first novel, The Cruiserweight, the lead female character wears a size 18 dress.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, you know, the wrestler, the cruiserweight wrestler, the lead character, he's just, you know, he's into those kind of girls. And there's a big age difference between them on top of that. And it works.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done, you know. I mean, my father never looked at anybody under 150 pounds. So he, you know, I think he was ahead of his time, too.
Wow. What do you find in terms of the response that you're getting from your readers?
I'd say the most part, they seem to like the idea. It's, of course, naturally, it's not going to appeal to everyone. And I'm okay with that because, you know, some people are thinking, you know, I don't have the quote-unquote cookie-cutter characters. My main novels delve into sports entertainment, which doesn't really turn a lot of people on, but that's okay. But for the most part, I'm always looking for something different and writing something different because, you know, they want the Harlequin type girls, you know, go nuts, go read that, you know. But if you're looking for something different, that's what I like to do.
I love it. The one that I especially enjoyed is A New Lease on Life, one of the four stories from Beautiful. And the name of the book for the readers to go get, first tell them where they can go and get your books.
You can buy all my books on Amazon.com. Everything's on here. Everything I've written so far is on there. There are various prices. As a matter of fact, Not Beautiful was selling for $3.99, but for right now, I'm selling it for a dollar off. And I'm going to maybe have an upcoming promotion on it pretty soon where everybody can download it for free for a limited time, maybe 3 or 4 days. Because I do have a new book coming out called The Maryland Diaries. Went through a lot of rewrites with that, and it's being edited. So that should be released in the upcoming weeks, too. It's the fourth book in the Cruiserweight series. And if you all want to see that, that's great. Go on Amazon.com. You can put in my name, Ellen Carrington. All my books, my name, my biography, the whole thing will come up.
Okay. And the name, the full name, the full title of Beautiful is Beautiful, Four Short Stories of Curvy Woman Love.
Yes.
And as I said, the one that I especially like is the first one. I think it's called A New Lease on Life.
A Lease on Love,
Melody,
yes.
Melody is renting an apartment to this hot guy named Alan, and she's a curvy gal, and she has a lot of residual issues from a past relationship that she had and a previous marriage that she had with a guy who put her down tremendously because of her size. And because of that, she felt that she was not worthy and that she wasn't beautiful and that she had to kind of settle for this kind of crap treatment. And so there's this fabulous, sexy guy, Alan, and there's a tremendous amount of attraction between the two of them, but she's kind of keeping it on the QT because she's feeling like, oh, there's no way he can like me. There's no way he can feel that I'm sexy. And yet he's lusting after her, going crazy after her.
Yeah, it's strange. And sometimes it's strange sometimes because, and I've done this years ago. I was so accustomed to thinking that way. But, hey, I'm going to just go and stay with the first guy that walks down the pike. Well,
yeah.
Now, I had this habit of doing self-destructive things, going through self-destructive behavior, going into self-destructive relationships, because I thought I didn't deserve any better. But then in the last few years, I started going, having empowerment groups. I read your book. I went into some serious therapy. And then it just pops into my head one day. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm better than this. I deserve better than this. And it just pretty much went uphill from there.
Yes, yes. That is such a powerful statement. I'm better than this. Because when we start to accept this kind of low-grade treatment and this low-grade way of thinking about ourselves, to think, no, I'm better than this, that we can reach for something bigger and higher and better and brighter. So that's what Melody finally does when she sees that Alan is genuine in his feelings and he's a good guy. And they follow through with this fabulously hot relationship.
And I think, if you read the story, too, I'll just touch on it a little bit, others for people listening out there. He talked briefly about his ex-wife, being
that's
the hot
right.
woman.
She cheated on him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
And he's feeling really burned and really hurt. Yes, yes, that's right.
So he's got a few issues too. So, but in the end, it works out. But I'm not going to go any further than that because they have to read the book.
Yes, yes. Now, on your radio show each week, could you tell us a little bit about your radio show?
The Ellen Carrington Show. We air weekdays. Wednesday, of course, 2 p.m. Eastern. It's a half-hour show unless we have a guest or two who's long-winded, and then I break it up into two half-hour shows on the same day. We talk about just about anything, whether it's sports or fashion or, you were on my show last week. We discussed your book
and
the type of work you did. Actually, I have some guests coming up in the next couple weeks that are going to talk about some things. And actually the show started in April of this year, so a little over 6 months I've been doing it, or coming up on 7 now. we talk about anything. You know, we funny things from Craigslist or things that happen in the news, or, you know, our guests come on and they talk about their books or their projects or whatever they're doing, or they talk about their own shows if they have radio shows, and a few of them have. And we just have, you know, I just have a good time with it.
What I love is that you just come out full tilt. I have never... Tell me about your passion with wrestling. That just was like, wow. Okay, this woman is totally, she's totally being herself. She's totally feeling the love and expressing herself. And I love the way that you demonstrate what it looks like to embrace your passion, because so many women are feeling like they have to fit into a mold, and it's not acceptable to connect their passion with their work. And what you have done by the Cruiserweight, you have a whole series talking about wrestling and romance, which is a very unlikely combination. I haven't gotten to read it, but I'm looking forward to it. You have taken the two and just created an explosive combination. How'd you do it?
actually, it took me about 2 years to write that book. And, I mean, it started out just something for fun. I'm like, I'm never going to get this thing published. I'm just going to mess around with it. But I thought, just for giggles, I'm going to put it on this writer's site called Autonomy, whatever it was called. And it seemed to receive some generally good feedback and suggestions about how I should write it better, make a change. And through that site, I came across this publisher who had just started up a little publishing house at the time in London. And he decided to take a chance on it. And it sold very well. As a matter of fact, I think I did better in Kindle sales on that book than I did in actual paperbacks, because that seems to be the thing nowadays. People are reading on electronic devices, which is fine, because I'm guilty of it, too. Everything's on my computer, right, because my bookshelves are overflowing as it is. But I sat down and just, you know, worked it out, and then, of course, I edited it, they edited it, it came out. The Kindle edition came out in October of 2010, and the paperback was out, I think, not long before Christmas of the same year. But it was an attention grabber, to say the least. It got people curious and gave me quite a few royalties. It didn't make me a millionaire, but it helped pay the bills. But anyway,
absolutely.
But I decided, you know, to go from there. I'm like, okay. In the book, you know, the couple's daughter is a baby or a toddler. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in the second book called The Cruiserweight's Daughter, she's in her early 20s now, and she decided to follow in her dad's footsteps. And, of course, she's also a curvy girl. Found a gorgeous guy who ended up her husband. But that's all I'm going to say about that book, because the second and third book of the Cruiserweight series are only available on Kindle right now, but probably eventually I'm going to try to see about releasing some of those in paperback. And of course, the third book circles around, it's called Class Act. That's the current book that's out now in the series. And it revolves around a gentleman who's the son of a seven-time Cruiserweight champion. But he had no interest in following his father into the field. As a matter of fact, in the beginning of the book, he's a probation officer for teenagers.
Oh, wow.
And he's getting pressure from his father and the friend of his father's who runs this wrestling school, because this father, you know, the wrestling school owner, knew, the big character's name is Donovan, knew Donovan since he was a child. And he's been dying to get this kid into a school to train. And now Donovan's stuck in his dilemma. Should I switch careers? Should I train with these guys? And in the meanwhile, he's meeting this little teeny tiny ballerina, and she's gorgeous. anything. Well, you know, of course, naturally, he has some kind of a crush on her, but he figures, no,
uh-huh,
why?
Absolutely.
He's not going to. Because he's short, has a, you know, he's short. He has a big nose, and he, even though he's considered good looking by many people, he doesn't think he's all that great. So it works for men too, not just us women.
Right. Right. Tell me how did you get to the point of being comfortable writing the erotic content that you do? Because I'm sure that was not what came out in high school, was it?
No, not quite.
Okay,
I would
so that
say
would be a pretty
happened.
Amazing high school.
Yeah. No. I actually wasn't very comfortable with that kind of thing back then. As a matter of fact, I didn't really start writing things like that, I'd say, until at least the last decade.
Really?
And, mm-hmm.
What inspired you?
Well, again, it was pretty much the whole empowerment thing. And the I can do better than this kind of attitude I developed.
Yeah.
And plus I got into a relationship that eventually is healthy. Well, was and is healthy. And,
yeah.
You know, and I get an idea in my head and I'll call him and say, what do you think about this? And he usually says, well, try it this way or my favorite, go for it.
Oh, I love that. That's music, right?
Yeah, he's great. And in fact, he has a few businesses. Matter of fact, he's down in Florida right now. He says, oh, man, there's a cold front coming through Tampa. Oh, I said, well, what's the temperature? He says, oh, about 70 degrees. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Gosh, that's cold.
It's in the 30s up here in Pittsburgh, and you're talking about a cold front? You're a wimp. Get your butt.
Oh, my God. That's where my mom is in Florida. Yeah, cold front, right.
Because, you know, he... Yeah, he has a business down there, and he just bought a house down there, and, of course, he rents out a couple of rooms in it, and then the guys are pretty good about keeping it up and everything, and he goes down and checks on things once in a while. You know, plus he has his things up here in Pittsburgh. He lives an hour outside of Pittsburgh. That's his primary residence, but, you know, he's going, oh, it's cold front coming through here. It's 70 degrees. Right. Meanwhile, it's 33 degrees in Pittsburgh, and we had snow yesterday morning. Talk about cold.
Wow.
Get home.
Wow, yes, pretty cold, frost on the glass. So what was your experience in terms of making the shift from, because I know that you also did some nonfiction writing, if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, I kind of did some things, I'd say in the last couple of decades. I did a little piece. It was about maybe a year or two ago. I'm trying to look it up, really. It's called about hearing loss and deafness. And it got picked up by a company called Internet Broadcasting. And they published it on a lot of news sites. So, you know, naturally I got a royalty out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And years ago, of course, I would off and on over the years, I'd, you know, write about certain things. I would like write about things like modeling scams, fire safety, especially when fire safety when you're traveling, because you hear about, I don't want to really want to go through this, about fires in hotels and people not being able to get out. And I mean, you got to learn about fire safety everywhere. And there's a piece I did, oh, I'd say maybe about 20 years ago, about being safe if you have to go out at night. Because on some, and that was inspired by a friend of mine who was actually mugged on her way home from work.
Oh, wow.
After she completed, yeah, she did a 4 to midnight shift, and she was on her way home, got mugged.
Oh,
so that
God.
Inspired me to write a piece about that. Thank God she was okay, but, you know, better to have your pride hurt and lose your things than to be actually hurt physically. Thank
so
goodness.
True. So true. Yes.
So I thought, you know, I said, you know what? If you're well enough, let me interview you about that. Let's do this piece because people will need to know what to expect out there. Even though where I live right now is relative, in general, probably has pretty much low crime. You don't hear about it like you do in like places like New York or Los Angeles or Chicago. But, you know, it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Because
that's right.
Like today, there was a shooting near a high school in the Beachview section of Pittsburgh. You know, and thank goodness the three kids who were shot weren't hurt that bad. You know, they're recovering.
God.
But it could have been so much worse.
Wow. Yes. Yes. Let me ask you, just switching gears for a little bit, as an author, when you start a new book, what is your criteria? What do you do? How do you start it? What's the follow-through method? Want to get an idea of how often you write. Is it something that's like a real rigid or a structured practice where, you know, every single day for an hour you write without fail? What is your way of doing it?
Well, before I start the book, I'm thinking, well, what do we want to get? What do I want to get across? What kind of story do I want to write? And, you know, fiction work, it's not too tricky. But right out loud, I was like, okay, I want this character to be like, this is what my character looks like. This is what he or she does. This is how we're going to write them. And I want, you know, the basic idea what the story would be around that character and, you know, some other background characters. And with nonfiction, it's a little more tricky because research is involved and you interview people, you're using Google to beat the band, you're reading newspapers or whatever you need to do before you can actually write that book. And I usually like to spend maybe a couple hours a day, maybe one or two chapters, if that, unless I have a flurry of ideas, and that has happened in the middle of the night sometimes. I'll wake up and say, that's it. This is what I want that character to do next.
Yes,
and then
yes,
I'll go on the computer and write it the next day.
Yes.
And then there's other days I'm just totally stuck. I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm on deadline here. Let's do this. But in the meanwhile, if that happens, I'll usually walk away and try to work on something else. And that, as a matter of fact, that's how Beautiful actually came to be. I was actually on a writer's block on another writing, you know, on one of my books. I forget which it was. Maybe it was Class Act or The Cruiserweight's Daughter. I forget which. But I'm like, you know what? I didn't, you know, let's do these. You know, I had all these short stories, you know, laying around. Let's put these four in a book.
You're kidding. So that was just a tangent, really? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How cool.
It was a side project. It's a side project because the book I was working on at the time, you know, I was in a writer's block and was driving me nuts. And I'm like, I had these short stories. Let's put them together and see what happens.
Wow. The thing that gets me is the attention to detail, how you come up with so many details of their characters and their personalities and the way they look. That's what I just think is so cool. As a nonfiction writer, that just seems so distant to me to be able to write fiction. So I applaud you. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's not as easy as it looks because, like I said, there's a lot involved. And, you know, some characters in my books are based on either actual people or people I've known in my life or, you know, sometimes relatives or, you know, the names, you know, I've gotten from either relatives or close friends or people I've worked with, that type of thing, or even people I've admired. And, you know, I can build build characters around them. And of course, have 50,000 rewrites in between because some days I'm like, well, I'll write this chapter and I'll go back to it the next day. And, you know what, I don't like this. I'm going to scrap it, start over. It's happened several times. Oh, good one.
Do you have a favorite character of yours?
Oh, wow. From my books?
Yeah, from any of the books.
Well, I think it's going to be a toss-up between Karen Montgomery from The Cruiserweight and Donovan Class from Class Act. to flip a coin.
And what do you? How do you identify with each of them?
Well, like I said, with Donovan, he isn't the GQ model type man. He's a real, he's a real guy I think other people would identify with. Yeah, girls like him, but he's not a threat to other men at the same time. Mm-hmm. And Karen, she's around my age. She's from the same city. She's in the same industry before she meets Brett. And she's just kind of a go-for-it gal that says, hey, I'm going to get this done, whether my editor will approve it or not. And of course, in the end, she goes on to become she goes on to write books herself.
Aha, aha! Little biography there, maybe.
Uh huh.
Which was the first book that was the departure from writing the nonfiction and doing the reviews and the articles?
The first fiction work. That probably would have been the Cruiserweight.
Okay. So that was the one that went from 0 to 60 in terms of steamy.
Yes, pretty much. Like I said, it took the longest for me to write, which is, it was 2 years. And the other ones, they usually average about, I would say, 3 to 6 months, depending on how well things progress. Like the Maryland Diaries, I think I started on it, I think it was either late March or early April, because I know I had two things going at the same time, because Class Act was released at the end of March. And I actually started it last November as part of the National Novel Writing Month project, which challenges writers to do a novel of 50,000 words in a month.
Wow.
So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to try this, just for giggles. And, of course, naturally you don't edit it or anything during that, from November 1st to 30th. That comes afterward.
Sure.
But, I'm pounding away on this because I already had a lot of ideas what I wanted to do with it before I started. And I think I ended up with, 82,000 and some words. I'm not sure. I have to go back and check by the end of the month. But I had to go back and rewrite it, and it had to be edited and everything, because a lot of it was just jumbled together. Because, 50,000 words in a month is a lot.
Oh, my God.
And
that's
to go
amazing.
To go over that, I had a disaster on my hands. But it turned out well in the end, so people liked it, at least the ones who left reviews anyway. And,
do you do your own editing or send it out for editing?
For the most part, I do most of it myself. But then I usually have a second pair of eyes, which is where the boyfriend comes in, and he spots mistakes, and he'll clean it up. And then sometimes the publishers, whoever, depending on, the publisher, wherever I send it out to, they'll clean it up a little bit more until, it's, quote-unquote, worthy enough to put on the market.
Do you get, do you stay in contact with your fans? Do you like offering book clubs or? Oh, tell me more about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I do have my Facebook. I do have a Twitter. I also have my website where people can leave things. I also have a blog called The Bookshelf where I'll choose a book of the week. Yours was on there at one point.
That's
thank you. I have a little column on there where what the authors are doing and, any book news. I try to put that out at least once a week. It's not going to be on the next 2 weeks because Thanksgiving is coming up and I have 20,000 things to be done, plus I have a guest coming on my show next Wednesday, and I'm prepping him. 20, and this book's getting ready to come out, so I've got a lot of things on my plate, so I'm like, I'm going to take 2 weeks off, and we'll come back in December after we're done with the show next week.
How much of the content of the book is autobiographical, drawn from your life experience or your stories, what would you say?
Oh, I'd say a couple of them are. I'm not going to say which ones, but a few of them.
Wow. Pretty, pretty awesome. What are, would you say, going back to Randy, what would you see? I know that it mentions that there are 50 special points. I had the terminology, but it was like 50 best tips on being 50 and fabulous from the book 50.
Oh, goodness. Actually, I think everybody should take...
So what are some of your favorites?
You know, tell you the truth, I love them all because they're true. You know, just because, and I like to say this, you know, just because you turn 50, especially these days, it's the new 30, it doesn't mean you're dead. Hey, let's go start buying the cemetery plot and that thing. No, I'm like... Who's to say you still can't go out dancing once in a while or dress up
That's
or look
right.
nice to your husband or your boyfriend or whatever instead of sitting around in your sweat saying, oh, I'm going to die soon. I just turned 50. No. I mean, my big joke is, hey, they're sending me, hey, look, I got something from AARP today. Want me to join? And it always goes to the race basket or whatever because I already have a membership. And they started sending me these things, you know, a couple months before my 50th birthday. I'm like, oh, gee, I know I'm going to turn 50, Pilby. You don't need to remind me.
Man, I think it is pretty damn cool to be able to embrace the fact that our bodies are changing and we're going through hearing loss and our bones aren't working the same as they used to and our joints are aching and all sorts of, you know, crazy stuff is going on. And to realize that that does not define who we are.
Exactly.
And it's your books that are pointing that out. Because it's a total pioneer, you know, effort to be out there and say, hey, you do not have to be perfect and look perfect and say perfect things to be lovable and to be a strong, powerful woman. So I love that. I absolutely love that. So I'd like to know more about Randy. Randy Gage.
Well, you know, as you can see from the book, she's kind of a high-spirited gal. You know, turn the big 5-0 doesn't bother her. And she's telling everybody why, and, you know. And about, you know, talks about office gossip and, of course, her body changing. I'm actually thinking about writing a sequel to that, you know, once I finish a couple of other projects I have in mind. Probably sometime next year I'll probably get one out, hopefully. But, you know, you just have to love the gal because she just doesn't care.
Wow.
Here I am. Yeah, I'm 50. You love me. Fine. If not, that's okay, too. My life goes on.
Oh, my gosh. How much freedom is in that? That's amazing.
Yeah, and I think we really need to start embracing that.
There are
a lot of blogs coming up that are very size positive and saying, hey, you know, I'm a size 16. I'm proud of it. Of course, I'm not a 16.
Yep.
But I'm just putting that out there as an example. And it's nice to see, especially these younger ladies that are doing this, and they're starting to embrace themselves because they're under so much pressure these days. You know, there's always the new diet. You know, there's, hey, you know, our gym is offering this for so much. Hey, look like this gal, and of course they're all touting plastic surgery on every other media site. And it's so nice to come across these blogs where it say, hey, you know, so what? You're a 12, you're a 16, you're a 20. It's okay
mm-hmm.
as long as you're healthy and you have a
mm-hmm.
healthy mind.
Yep.
And we need to start telling
yep.
our sisters, our daughters, our friends that, and encourage them to be themselves instead of going into a mold where society says, quote, unquote, this is the only way you can be, quote, unquote, perfect.
let me get your thoughts on this. Many times what I see is in the size acceptance community, in the plus positive, I see plus size women going to more extraordinary lengths to represent that they love themselves, that they'll, you know, show up in underwear. Yeah, underwear. And I'm not digging this. I feel like it's unnecessary to go there. What's your thought about that? Am I showing my prudishness? Because there's
know what?
A little
I
bit
don't
of prude
think,
in me.
You know what? I really don't think you are. And I love, like I mentioned, I love the fact that these there are blogs and sites out there that are promoting the plus size industry in a positive manner. As a matter of fact, there's a I think there's an upscale store, I think it's over in the United Kingdom, that are using models that aren't airbrushed, which I think is
mm-hmm.
great. But getting back to your question, while it's great to have confidence in your body and to be size positive, I always like to say just because they make it in our size doesn't give us the license to wear it. Now, me, at my age, even if I was 20 years old, I'm not going to go wear a bikini. I'm not wearing tube tops. And, you know, I'm not going to wear, short shorts with writing across my backside, because, one, I wouldn't feel comfortable that way. And, second, I don't find it appropriate. You know, I always say, you know, dress for your body size, dress for your age, dress for the occasion, because you're not going to wear a tube top to the office. Even on casual
right.
day, it wouldn't
oh.
be very appropriate. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you on that, you know, and with any body size, not just anyone over size 10 or whatever, you know, there are limits.
Yeah, I'm
know.
Absolutely in sync with you. I think that looking at my personal experience as a fat woman, there's, for so many years, there's been such defamatory pressure put on the word fat. So what I learned from Dr. Linda Bacon, the author of Health at Every Size, is that by taking that word back and saying, yeah, baby, I'm fat, so what? It's just a descriptor for body size. Because if you say overweight, it's more like over what weight?
Exactly,
so
over whose weight? Your doctor,
over whose
the insurance
weight, exactly.
company, the weight charts, whose? Societies.
Yes.
You know what? Get out of that mentality.
Yes, and I love it because it takes off the edge. It takes off that kind of bristly feeling like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm fat. Oh, I'm a horrible person because of it. No. Hey, that's the smallest part of me. But what I think is that, oh,
and
man,
the way,
I lost my train of thought.
And it goes back to, you know, generally the way we're some of us are built. And I made it,
yes.
you know, and I was talking to some friends on another site one day, you know, about, hey, you know, they're talking about, you know, there's pear shape, there's box shape. And I said, you know what? I could weigh 97 pounds. I'm still going to have a big butt because that's the way I'm built.
Yes.
You know, my mother
Me
had
too.
One. My sisters had them. My great-grandmother had it. There's nothing I can do. And
me
I have to
too.
Sign my piano legs. I'm 5'2". There's nothing I can do about it. It's heredity.
That's me too, yes. So what I was thinking was, for me personally, my challenge has always been around, you know, fat thighs. So for me, just to wear a pair of shorts and a sleeveless top, that's like a huge coming out party. That's why
oh, exactly.
I think that. Yeah, that's why I think that women going to the extremes, especially young women, going to the extremes and being half naked out there and putting themselves on the Today Show and all the other, I think it's sending a bad message to the kids that are coming up.
Exactly. And, you know, I do have a short sleeve top, but I usually have a cardigan or a jacket to wear over it because, you know, being a bigger person, you're going to get warm quicker. And you're not going to wear a big, bulky, long-sleeve sweater under a suit jacket because you're going to bake. So So it's always nice to keep a short sleeve top around for that purpose, but to go around with your goodies hanging out, come on, girls, get some self-respect, okay? I mean, if, whether you're 2 or 22, that's not a good idea.
Wow. So tell us, descendant from, okay, I probably pronounced it wrong, the silent film star Ruby DeHemer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, actually,
and
I found that one of my uncles is in a big-time genealogy, and, of course, I kind of got addicted to Ancestry.com, too, so I'm like, I'm looking up my parents' names just for, you know, just to see. And actually, I was doing a little research for, I wanted to find out what year my, I had a paternal grandfather. I never met him because he died when my father was only 4 years old of cancer, and I wanted to find out more about him. So I got to digging and through, I'm like, okay, I found what I needed. I'm like, you know what? I really don't know. And like I said, my uncle was a big genealogy fan, too. So I'm digging through the records he had online, plus what I found on Ancestry.com. And I came across this lady, and she was actually an ancestor, you know, further back on my mother's side. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So I'm Googling her and everything else. And a lot of my ancestors, they were either, you know, on my mother's side, they came from England or, you know, they were Colorado, New Jersey, pretty much up the East Coast here in the United States. And there were a lot of, you know, French, there's English, there's Dutch, there's German and everything. I mean, we're pretty much a Heinz 57. But I found this lady. I'm like, wow. I mean, my mother's ancestors had quite a history. I mean, we're dating back to when they came over on the Mayflower.
Wow.
But I didn't really know a lot about my father's family, you know, and I mean, I found his military record. I mean, I found out, I actually found my paternal grandfather's draft registration card for World War I.
Wow.
Yeah, and I had no idea about this guy until I got on, you know. So, people, you want to find out about your relatives, go on Ancestry.com.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find out a lot. Things you never knew.
Wow. And you're related to James Baldwin.
Yeah, he, yeah.
How did that
come
up?
He was on, it, again, the family tree from my uncle's tracing the family tree. And it turned out he was a crime reporter for a paper down in Lancaster, PA. And he'd also written a book. And I'm trying to find it. It must have been out of print for years, you know, probably like hundreds of years before Amazon. No, not hundreds of years, but close enough, you know. Oh, you know, we're going back quite a ways. And, yeah, he would write. Yeah, he did the crime beat for a newspaper down there. And he wrote a book. And I'm like, well, that explains where I got my love for writing.
Uh-huh. Definitely. So I know that you you do books for Kindle, but here's the question. Do you have a Kindle? Do you like the electronic, all of the electronic opportunities that we have to read? Or do you love, like me, the romance of turning pages?
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a minute.
I was just wondering if you have a Kindle. I know that you write for Kindle, but do you? Are you fully immersed in digital technology and you have your books on Kindle or iPad and, you know, you enjoy reading them that way, or do you have? Do you prefer actually reading the book and having it in your hands?
Well, actually, I kind of like the feeling of having a book in my hand, but at the same time, I don't have a Kindle, but they do have an app on Amazon where you can actually download Kindle onto your computer for free, and I'm able to read off of it. And of course, you know, there's other places where you can, you know, people read on their phones or. And I have a little music player here that actually has an application where I can read books on it. So,
wow.
But there's nothing better than the smell and the feel of a physical book, which is probably why I've got so many of them falling off my shelves and then my cupboards and everything else. I don't even know how many I have here because I was reviewing books for Free Press, which is a division of Simon & Schuster up in New York, and they would send me free books to review and before they were released, and I got to read that, and they sent me a lot of good ones. I mean, I don't think there was one I really didn't care for, but the rest were actually quite good.
Wow. When would you say you first fell in love with books?
I'm sorry, I can't. There must be something wrong with the audio. I can't hear.
Okay. When would you say you first fell in love with books?
Oh, goodness. Probably when my grandfather on my mother's side gave me Around the World in 80 Days. I think I was about 10 or 12 years old.
Wow. I remember that. Yes. Yes. So, Lori, what recommendation would you have for up-and-coming writers? You have done so much, and you've covered so many different would you call them genres?
No,
maybe I'm using the wrong word. Going from the fiction to nonfiction, it's such a huge brushstroke in terms of changing the identity of the characters and the content and using different skills. What recommendation would you have for somebody who loves to write?
Well, as I always advise on other interviews, I say write what you know, stick with it, and always have a second pair of eyes somewhere, because even if you do editing yourself, you're going to miss something. So it's always good to pass it on, especially someone you trust. And another thing, if you want, the best thing too is to get honest feedback. I mean, family and friends are going to pat you on the back and say, "Hey, yeah, it's great," you know. But outside your circle and get someone who's going to be clearly unbiased, because those are the ones who are going to give you the honest feedback. What needs change? What's good? How to proceed? You know, sometimes they'll even pick up any errors that are written.
That's right. That's important. So what would you say, what is it, the book that you're working on now that you mentioned? I cannot recall.
I'm working on the fourth book in the Cruiserweight series called The Maryland Diaries. Did a lot of rewrites on it, and hopefully it should be out within the next several weeks. It's actually, we're going back to Donovan from Class Act. It actually, I'm going to do a little synopsis here. His father clean out the garage, and they come across these several boxes, I should say, and they've never been opened. Dad, what's this? I don't know, probably brought it when I moved years ago. And went a decade without opening these. So he opens one, and it turns out he finds all these diaries, these videos, these photo albums, his baby book, and his mother, his late mother, she died of breast cancer when he was a teenager. She kept all of this, so that's what he's doing. He's reading about all this. And in the meantime, there is an unrelated secret that gets revealed later in the book.
Ooh.
So hopefully people will be enjoying this. I know I enjoyed writing it.
Oh, yeah. Very, very cool. What would you say is the book that is closest to don't want to let all the cats out of the bag, but closest to your heart? Yeah, closest to your heart.
Oh, goodness. That's so hard. Well, actually, I think all the books in the Cruiserweight series thus far, I'd say those are my crowning glory. because it was actually the book, actual book, The Cruiserweight itself, that's, you know, kind of set the book writing thing on fire. So that's pretty much my baby right there.
I love that. I love that. You know, combining your passion with wrestling with writing. Who da thunk? That is the coolest thing.
Wow,
so
I definitely
do you have
enjoy
any
that.
Yeah, yeah. What about the gals who are struggling and feeling self-conscious about their bodies? How can they, what's your recommendation for how they can feel more comfortable just being themselves exactly as they are?
Well, first of all, stop listening to what the media is pushing on you, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You see things in magazines. Ladies, the women in there, 99 times out of 100, it's airbrushing. Nobody looks like that. Okay? And go look at some Renaissance art. You know, in Renaissance art, curvy women, big women, were reveled back in the day, you know, during that time period. Now, go to an art museum and look at Renaissance art and see how these women were reveled. And, you know, there are, like I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of blogs, websites, and other things online that are size positive. You know, join up with those groups. I would also tell them to, you know, visit your site, read your book. Oh, and for heaven's sake, don't settle for second best. You know, you're
yes,
better than that.
Yes, yes, yes. Scream it out. Scream it out. It's so, so true. Yeah. There are so many women who are struggling with that feeling that because they don't look that certain way, and they never will, or there's that belief, I want to, I need to, I desperately should look like this, but until I do, I'll settle for this. And it's kind of a way of putting off living. So from what I know about you, from what I've read, you are definitely not a person who is a fan of putting off and procrastinating on living. So what do you want to say to the gals who are, you know, digging in their heels and saying, oh, I'm not fully baked yet. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Well, I've heard this a lot over the years. Well, I'll buy a bathing suit when I lose 50 pounds. Mm. Or I'll go skiing when, you know, I get into a size 3. Or, you know, I'll do that. You know, I'll start dating again after my divorce because I gained weight during my divorce. Come on. We only have one dance in this lifetime. By all means, embrace it. You know, don't wait until you fit into the same dress you had since you were 19 years old. You know, burn that dress. Go buy a new one.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. You are such
an
inspiration.
And I find, you know, people of our size, they, you know, a lot of them married young, even though the person was not ideal for them. It's like, well, you know what? I got this guy. Might as well marry him now because there's not going to be anything better that comes along. Don't settle for that. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because you're going to, chances are you're going to have a lot of heartache later on in your life and you're going to miss out on so much. And I almost fell into that trap. I'm like, wait a minute. Well, let me put it off for a few more years. And I put it off for a few more years and a few more years. And in looking back, I'm glad I did because I don't think I've done the things that I'm doing now had I made a different decision, say, 2 or 3 decades ago.
Wow, Lori, thank you so much. In the minute remaining, please tell everybody again how they can get in touch with you, how they can find more about your books and all that good stuff.
Well, they can visit my website at www.lannecarrington.com. I have a Twitter. I have Facebook. You can, you know, visit me on Amazon.com. I have a page there with all my books. You can email me. My email address is on my website. You can even get in touch with me through my website. You know, comment on my blog posts or whatever. I look forward to everybody's feedback, and I certainly hope they buy a book. And I enjoy meeting everyone, whether it's in person or online or even on the phone.
All right. You have been such a pleasure this evening. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.